So if you want, you can just make it a bit more concise. But the question is why and how did NGOs become the principal approach to help the Global South?
This is what my book's about, Manly. So thanks very much for asking. I think there's a few answers to that, right? So the argument that I made in the book, so NGOs have always existed, and you know, there's all different kind of ideas about, you know, what is an NGO, you know, like, so I'm like, you know, you have different names for it. You know, I suppose in America or in the United States, they would call them private voluntary organizations, you know, PVOs rather than NGOs. Or you might call them charities, very simply, or you might call them voluntary agencies, or you might call them lots of different things, you know. And so they've always existed, you know. But I think our my argument that I've in the book that I've written about this is that there's a moment from the late 1960s where something happens in society. In terms of how people see their relationship to the outside world, that shifts, as you're kind of hinting with your question, away from a kind of you know, oh, that's the government's responsibility, towards something more of, you know, well, actually, we want to be engaged with this, and we're going to do it through these organizations rather than support for the central state. Now, that depends. It depends on which country you're talking about, right? So the levels of NGO support, like, so for example, because I'm talking from the Irish context, you know, it's you know, NGOs are linked in our context to kind of a longer history of missionary involvement and Christian involvement in the Global South. And so therefore, I think Irish people were always used to non-state actors. In the Canadian case, you know, the CEDA, the Canadian Development Agency, has always been kind of a strong actor. But then you have the development of a strong NGO sector from the late 1960s onwards. And the reason I think for that, I think that that happens is, you know, well, I've got four main reasons in the book, which I can give you. This is because I should actually remember them at this stage, what they are. The first one is just simply that, you know, after empire ends, access to the Global South changes, right? So what do I mean by that? I mean that, you know, the before empire ended, it was very rare that let's take the British Empire. It was very rare that a non-British NGO would be prominent as an actor in those areas. Once empire ends, then that kind of changes in two ways. One is that the official British state has now moved out officially, right? You know, but its influence is still there in the sense that if you look at NGOs in the late 60s, a lot of, so British NGOs, the major ones, a lot of them have ex-colonial officials or ex-British army officers working for them. And so there's a continuity there. But so that gives the organizations, you know, a link back to empire. But now they can go into that territory a lot easier because, you know, it was seen as, you know, not quite taboo, but not really the done thing to operate in, let's say, in the British Empire, if you were an American NGO, for example, right? So that kind of that changes the territory. The crises that I've talked about, where NGOs are kind of invited in and then never really leave, are also important in that sense. So two happen, one in Biafra that I mentioned earlier on, but also in East Pakistan in 1970, 71, which is now which became Bangladesh. So it's basically the war that created Bangladesh, which actually forced 9 million refugees across the border into India in about 8 months or 8.5 months in 1971. It's a ginormous number. I mean, at one point you're talking about hundreds of thousands crossing the border every day. And so that kind of, you know, you have that moment again, it's on TV and it becomes really visible to people. And what becomes really visible is the brand.